Hello and welcome to another episode of the Cultivate Church Planting Podcast. I'm Brian Kelly, your host, and I'm thrilled to have an incredible guest with us today, James Travis, a dedicated pastor in Bahrain. We're also joined today by my longtime friend, Jeff Geip. Well, Jeff and I recently had the pleasure of traveling to Bahrain and spending some time with James and his church fellowship there. In this episode, we dive deep into the unique landscape of Christianity in the Arabian Gulf. We explore the challenges and triumphs of starting and sustaining churches in this culturally rich region. I had a great time hanging with James, and I know you're going to enjoy this insightful conversation on navigating faith, community, and growth in the heart of the Gulf. All right, welcome to the Cultivate Church Planting Podcast, and we've got a special episode today because not only are we with some really special guys here, but we are actually recording from the Kingdom of Bahrain.
Woo-hoo.
In the Middle East. And and I'm with Jeff Geip, who you know by now if you've been listening to the show, because he seems to get his way onto almost every other episode we do, which is great, which we like, which we're happy about. And we've got James Travis, who is a pastor and who lives here in Bahrain. Pastors, what's the name of the church again?
Sar Fellowship.
Sar. Why did I want to say Selah? That's a...
Yeah, it's a different language.
Yeah. Sar Fellowship, and they have a great church. We're excited about visiting and sharing at on Friday, because the churches here meet, for the most part, on Friday, which I learned was a day off in the Middle East. We have Saturday, Sunday, and you were telling me, James, it was here. It was what was it? Friday, Saturday?
It used to be Thursday, Friday.
Thursday, Friday. Now it's
Friday, Saturday.
Okay, Friday, Saturday. So we get to go to the church fellowship. So welcome, guys.
It's always good to see you, Brian. Been seeing a lot of you lately.
I know.
Been on the plane together for so many hours, but it's been a great time.
We had a 14-hour flight. One flight here. I've got a 16-hour back. And we're also joined by Drew the cat, who's in our, you may hear in our episode. So he's here to be part of the gang. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Bahrain.
Oh, thank you. And tell us a little bit about your story, James. How'd you get here? What are you doing here? Who are you?
Wow.
No pressure.
How long have you got? My wife and I, Robin and I, have lived here for 10 years. We've got two little boys who were born here. My granddad lived here in the 1960s. He was the British Air Force, and he was here in the 60s, which means my mum was also here. So for our family living in the Middle East, and in particular this part of the Middle East, the Gulf, is very, very normal. I was born in Dubai. So this part of the world is very normal for us. So after Robert and I got married, we wanted to move to this part of the world because it's very regular for us. It's very normal. We knew what life was going to be like. We knew the quality of life, all those kind of bigger picture things. So we came here because we wanted to, basically, which is kind of different to a lot of people. We were talking yesterday at the airport. Why do people come to Bahrain? And it's usually with work, or they're sent here, or they come here with some different intentions about how they're going to use their time, or they're put here with the military. But in 10 years, we've not met too many people who genuinely wanted to be here. But I think because of the family history that we've got, there was just a bit of inevitability, really.
Yeah.
I think we were always going
to
live here.
And you're talking mostly about like foreigners, expats, things like that.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you're Bahrainian, did I say that right?
No.
But you were so polite, you were just going to let me go on. But
well, I did yesterday as well.
Really? Yeah. Oh my, so I feel embarrassed.
What's the proper way of saying it?
Bahraini.
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 It's close, but.
Oh. Yeah.
But not quite.
Did I say that to anybody yesterday, Jeff? Did I say that?
I don't think we've said that word.
Okay, good.
I think that's a new word for us.
This is one thing as a missionary going on the mission field and stuff, you always want to be like culturally kind of sensitive. So that's why we're glad that we have you.
Well.
And James has been our tour guide and host. It's been amazing. And the food, I would say, what's your favorite part? I was going to say the food.
Oh, yes. the food yesterday morning, that breakfast place.
Yeah.
Was it called Lumi?
Mm-hmm. Lumi. Oh. So we're going back there today.
Yes, we are. As soon as this podcast is over, yeah. Best breakfast ever.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm surprised you don't remember it from 2019.
If you've been here before.
Yeah, if it's that good.
Yeah.
You've been here before, Jeff.
Yes, I'm old and I had COVID twice. So I don't remember anything since 2019.
Yeah. So you were born in Dubai. Is that a Dubai accent you have?
No.
My good man?
No. No, it's not. No, so I was born in Dubai in the 80s. Mum and dad were Korea school teachers. And they spent the middle part of the 80s working in Dubai, in the UAE. So I was born there. But fairly soon after being born, we moved home. So I grew up in the north of the UK.
Okay.
Somewhere between Leeds and Bradford. So no, I don't have an Arabic accent.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. And so when you moved back, so you've been here 10 years? 10 years?
Yeah, we came in August 2013.
Okay. And what'd you come for? Church?
No. I think, like I said, we came here because we just wanted to live in this part of the world.
Ah, okay.
Which is kind of different because a lot of people are put here or told to be here.
I should have been paying attention when you were saying that before.
That's all right. Daydreaming about breakfast.
I was actually. No, we have jet lag. We have jet lag.
Yeah, true. That peculiarly
so that's a disclaimer, I forgot
American
to say.
Phenomenon yeah. of jet lag.
So what did you and Robin do when you moved
We
here?
Came here to school teach as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Robin is now still school teaching. And I've moved from doing school teaching and bits and bats at church to school teaching and being the assistant pastor at church to now stopping school teaching and being full-time at church.
Nice. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Let's talk about church planting, Christians in the Middle East, all the stuff we want to know. Because I think when people are going to tune into this, they're wondering, how do you be a... Because here, let me just give you my perspective from, I guess, an American perspective or someone... I don't personally like tune into a lot of news, but I feel like from the news and stuff, if you talk about Middle East, you're thinking about wars. Obviously, right now, we're currently recording and... big conflict in Israel. I don't know when this episode is going to be released, but maybe sooner rather than later. But so who knows what's going to happen? So that's all, it's all kind of, for lack of a better word, I guess what comes to my mind is a negative kind of thing. Like the Middle East, it's scary. It's, you know, a different place. But in our experience here, especially interacting with people, the Bahrainian.
Bahraini.
Bahraini people. Oh, let me continue the Bahraini. I'm going to edit that out so it makes me sound right. The Bahraini people, very welcoming to us, even with our American accents. I mean, you have an advantage. You have the British accent. But even with us, even during this time of kind of strife, I felt welcomed. I felt, you know, so let's talk about maybe the perception versus the reality of a Westerner living in the Middle East, just in general, and then go into some of the more Christian aspects of it.
Yeah, I think, well, the Middle East is a big place. Some people would start it as far west as Turkey and all the way probably as far east as some of the stands, maybe as far as India to some people. So it's a huge place. And I think you're right that people think about the Middle East and there's usually a particular part of the world that they're thinking about. And it's usually somewhere between Israel and Iraq, sort of Israel, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, maybe Iran, if they're feeling a bit adventurous, but usually Israel to Iraq, that kind of corner of the world. But our part of the Middle East, this part of the Middle East, the Gulf nation states is very, very different to that part, the other part of the Middle East.
So would you say there's kind of like a two different kind of Middle East, I guess, for lack of a better word,
I think, like we said, the Middle East is a really broad brushstroke, and it's kind of like saying.
And our news is always about the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the conflict in Israel. It's always the, you know, the sensationalizing of the problem. Mm-hmm. But like I've flown through Dubai a million times because we used to live in Uganda. We'd go through Emirates Airlines and do all that, and. When first time I went to Dubai, I was surprised. I was shocked. I was like, man, First of all, I was telling Jeff this the other day. I had a 12-hour layover. It was overnight. And I'm like, I'm not sitting in the airport for 12 hours. I just sat on a plane for 14. So I walked out. This was probably like 10, 12 years ago. I got a taxi and I said, I have, you know, all the time in the world. Let's drive around. Show me the city. And he literally drove me to all the like different, mm-hmm. like the tallest building in the world. And what's the famous hotel there? Burj Khalifa or something like that.
That one.
Oh yeah. There's a model of it there. Yeah. Nice. And so he drove me around. He brought me to some of the markets and all this. And then he told me that I'm like, is it dangerous at night if I walk around and stuff? He's like, no, you could walk around with money hanging out of your pocket and you wouldn't be bothered. And just the perception versus the reality, I was amazed. But that would be the Gulf. Mm-hmm. What's the group of countries called?
The GCC.
GCC, yeah, that's
the Gulf Cooperation Council.
Yeah, yeah, good job.
I think.
And so, but then once again, the kind of the ability to walk around and, you know, especially as a tourist, I guess it's
fun. A very safe part of the world. We, as we were talking about at dinner the other day, our kids here just go wandering off in the supermarket. It's not a particularly positive habit, but they're safe doing it. You know, we'll go out for dinner or lunch with them, take them out for breakfast, and they're very comfortable just, you know, pottering around. And again, as we said, petty crime is very, very low. Lots of people come to this part of the world for a better, quote, a better life. And so it's not in their interests to lose that by, you know, making a poor choice. So now generally it's very, very safe. And it is very, very different to that part of the Middle East that we often hear about in the news and that's often plagued by conflict. It's a very, very different place. As you said, with Dubai, and you spent 24 hours in Bahrain, it's a completely different part of the world. And lots of people are very surprised when they talk to us about life in Bahrain, where they see pictures, videos, uh-huh. talk about the freedoms and the protections that the church has.
Yeah.
You know, what it's like being a Christian in this part of the world. So it surprises a lot of people.
Let's talk about the church. You yourself did not plant the church, but you've pastored for the last 10 years?
I've done bits and bats. So okay. I was youth pastor and assistant pastor and worship. And then we've kind of taken that kind of a stereotypical path from doing more and more and more to now just being the kind of the lead pastor. Yeah.
Great. And the church here, do you have, what's the view from the citizens and the government, especially on the church? Like, is it okay to have a church, or what's going on?
Yeah. So if you're Bahraini, you're assumed to be Muslim. Okay. A lot of Bahrainis would say that they were born a Muslim, from the experiences that we've had and the people that we've met. So they would assume that if you're not a Muslim and you're from the West, then you are a Christian. As the kind of the default setting. So we've said to a few people in the last few years, it's probably easier for us to live a thoroughly Christian life here because it's expected of you. You know, it's expected that your average person in this part of the world takes their faith and takes their religion very seriously, and then it's expected of you as well. If you're not a Muslim, then and you're from the West, you're obviously a Christian, and you live a Christian life and you do Christian things, you observe Christian holidays, and as part of your living out your faith, you go to church. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the church enjoys. Again, I can't speak for every church in every country in the Middle East, but
but just for your
the churches
in your
here in Bahrain enjoy a wonderful freedom, a wonderful relationship with government, very supported.
We went to a hospital yesterday.
Yep.
American, what's the name of
American
the mission?
Mission.
The American, what's the name of the mission? American Mission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to remember.
Originally, it was the Arabian Mission.
Ah, okay.
When it left America in the 1880s. And as it touched down in this part of the world, it was then the American Mission.
I loved it because you were telling us that they had a threefold, I do remember something. They had a threefold mission, which was the church, the hospital, and the
school. It's a school, So there's three kind of main legacies of the American Mission here in the 1880s.
Yes. But this was probably one of the nicer hospitals I've seen, built by the American Mission and co-built by the What's it called? King something? What's the king's name?
The full name of the new hospital is the King Hamad American Mission Hospital. King Hamad.
Okay. And that was, so it's a really a joint venture kind of with the
government.
Yeah,
between
government
and the American
church.
Mission. An American Mission enjoys a very special place here. Mm. Yeah, it's very favorably looked upon by the royal family. The population's about 2 million. And wow. As far as I understand, it's about 70-30. So local to expat. So there are hundreds of thousands of non-Bahrainis living here. And that's replicated, and that's
when you talk about expats, is it just from Western countries, or are expats include Philippines?
Yeah, absolutely.
India,
anybody that's non-native.
Indonesia.
There's a huge Indian population. I think somebody told me that there are 400,000 Indians living in Bahrain. So about one in five people in Bahrain is actually Indian.
Okay.
Very big Filipino population.
What was the breakup again of expats versus
It's about,
locals?
I think it's about 70-30.
70-30 expats
local to expats. So 70% Bahraini.
30%.
Okay. So there's hundreds of thousands of people here who are not Bahraini.
Right. And the majority of your ministry as a church are to that expat
community.
And you were talking about this yesterday. Maybe you can elaborate. And one of your passions is, you know, a lot of Christians will come to the Middle East and their goal is ministry to, you know, the local mm-hmm. people, which is fine. But there is often a neglected aspect of ministry, and that is to the massive expat. Because all the, like, workers, laborers, that sort of thing are generally going to be the expat mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, absolutely.
From countries, like all of our, the people that we've been connecting with and meeting with are from different nationalities. So what's your heart on ministering to that?
Yeah, it's community? Interesting because there are millions of people in this part of the world who, like you said, are often a bit forgotten. So, you know, the population here is 2 million, 70% local, 30% expat, and that's replicated and that's mirrored around these Gulf states. So in the UAE, you know, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, mm-hmm. it's more 90% expat, 10% local.
Really?
Wow.
And then that's kind of an extreme example in the UAE, but
wow.
This huge...
So 9 out of 10 people you're going to see are
not
UAE from...
are not Emirati.
Wow. Did you know that, Jeff?
I did not. That is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And how many churches do you think there are between in those countries?
Oh, that's a good question. We were in the UAE last weekend visiting some friends in Abu Dhabi, and we could have gone to, I don't know, 10 or 15 different churches on a Sunday morning.
And were they packed full of thousands of people?
This is a big church. There's maybe 400 or 500 people.
Wow.
And they're legal. They're licensed. They're meeting very openly and freely. Hired out a ballroom in a hotel and just did their thing.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking it is, I mean, you feel pretty strongly that there's lots of opportunity to plant churches.
There is, because like we said, there's this population split all around this part of the Middle East, and there are millions of people to whom nobody's ever sent. Now, thankfully, this part of the world is very supportive and very tolerant of church life and Christians doing Christian things and gathering for worship and impacting their community as Christians are called to do. But we've never met anybody in the last 10 years who's been sent here or feels led here to care for the expat population. Like you said, everybody comes to reach out to locals, which is great. And if that's what God's called them to do, then we'll support them in any way that we can. But there are millions of people spread around this part of the Middle East who are not originally from here and are often kind of left out, kind of slipped through the cracks. And, you know, since like our church has been around in some way, shape or form since the 1940s. As expat populations in this part of the world grew, as oil was discovered. So churches have kind of grown quite organically. There's a bunch of believers here that want to worship in spirit and truth in their own language and style and culture. So we're a church now. And that's happened all over these Gulf countries. And it's churches like that with history and a real presence in the community. Because another thing in this part of the world is that your history is your identity. So, which is why the American Mission is looked on so favorably, because it's been here for 130 years and they were here before oil was found. So the church and Christianity has never been viewed here as just come in for a meal ticket, because it was here to do good, just to be here before.
And it's a lot of that good work that gave the open door for other activities within the community, for the church.
Yeah, so again, a lot of a lot of stuff happens here based on relationship, and nobody's going to engage you in a conversation about kind of serious things about life and faith and eternity if you're just here for a few weeks passing through on a short-term kind of visit. So yeah, history is really important. You can point to a legacy of you can trace your history back, but also a relationship as well.
Yeah. If someone wanted to plant a church in Bahrain, how difficult would it be? Or easy would it be, I guess you should say?
Good question. Yeah, it's kind of two questions. So if people just want to come and like start a church, you come, hire a space in a hotel, gather and do your thing, and it's fine. If you want all the papers and the licenses and the stamps and all that stuff, that takes time. No, it's a good question. So initially, it'd be very, very simple. A lot of hotels and schools and places for hire are very, very receptive to hiring out space to churches. And so there's no need to be false about why you're hiring space. We've hired space in schools, hospitals, hotels.
That's what I'm kind of getting at, but I don't want to say anything that's going to get you in trouble
church.
So that's why I'm trying to...
Initially, starting a church here is very, very simple because people are very willing and open to hire space to churches because of the legacy of people that have been here for 130 years and have proven and have evidenced that churches are here to do good things.
Okay.
From there, the steps would be to probably come alongside one of the more established churches. You know, there are a couple of churches that have been here for 120, 130 years, and we met a couple of the guys yesterday who have taken on that baton for the next few years. But initially, it would be very, very simple because a church plant would be very, very simple because of the legacy of people who've been here before. And it's some of those legacy churches that would then provide all the assistance that you need to kind of get to that next level.
So there's a favorable view. Let me ask you this. What if a church came in and did not respect the way, did not work together with other churches and started doing things that were opposed to what would
I think
be
that's when
the government would want
to, they'd run
to
into
do.
Trouble. And the government, to be fair to them, are very, very open and honest with, there is a method here and there is a channel for you to start meeting as a church. There are these structures in place. There are these, again, the legacy and the more established, and there's a relationship between the government and these churches that have been here for more than 100 years. So we know them and we trust them, and the evidence that they're not here to kind of undermine or kind of, you know, sneakily get around the back and change everybody's views of stuff. They've established that they're here to do good things and they can be trusted to look after the expat community. So a church plant or a newer church would probably be strongly encouraged to come alongside one of these more established churches to really find a lot of legal protection and a lot of legitimacy in the eyes of the government. Yeah. But initially, starting a church in this part of the world is as simple as arriving and making some relationships in the expat community, if that's what you're going for, or whatever community you want to start a church within, and then hiring some space, which people are very, very open to do because of the legacy of people who've come before.
Okay. Jeff, what do you think about all this?
Well, I was so blessed to be here in 2019. And one of my most fond memories is looking into your congregation and seeing the diversity. Different countries, different cultures, different languages. I just thought it was so beautiful. So that's really a benefit, seeing the diversity, but the unity of Christ from people all over the world. How does that set with you now? And is that something that people could get really excited about if they were thinking about planting a church here?
How does it sit with me now? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You'll see tomorrow at church.
Yeah.
So again, we've talked about churches in Bahrain a lot as we've been out and about, and there's kind of one of everybody and one of every flavor and style and culture of church. But within those different shapes and sizes and flavors of church, like you said, there's a lot of diversity. And so our church is predominantly Western expat. But on any given Friday when we meet for worship, there's people from every corner and continent of the world. And like you said, it's a really beautiful thing. And it gives a lot of, not weight as if scripture needs our experiences to back it up, but it helps us to see the truth of scripture when, you know, you read about people from all corners of the world and from north and south and east and west coming together. It's a really nice little preview of that. Every Friday when you turn up and there's a worship leader from Africa and a family from Canada and a teacher from Australia and, you know, there's people from all corners of the world. So it's a really nice thing. In terms of coming and starting churches and planting churches, a lot of people, when they first arrive, kind of stick to their own community, looking for a bit of stability when they're away from home and a bit of normality. And then over time, probably integrate out into the wider expat community. So in the context of starting churches and planting churches, there's really nice opportunities and there are really rich opportunities from both perspectives. If you've got a heart for a particular people group, probably a community of them here. Maybe not in Bahrain in particular, but around these Gulf nation states.
Coming into this church where you have a great fellowship, you have a community of people that love one another, worshiping the Lord together from all different places, mostly Western expats, but you know, everybody's welcome. Now, what if people see that in the country that you're in and are attracted to that community and start to come in as local Bahraini? What is the process? Is that...
He said it wrong again.
No, that was good.
No, I said it right. I'm just trying to ask the question so that he has the freedom to, you know, to answer
the
question.
No, it's a good question. Anybody's welcome at the church, regardless of where you're from. And a lot of people in Bahrain have very good and solid friendships and relationships with Bahraini people. And they often bring their friends to church.
Mm-hmm.
So first, like you said, yes, everybody's welcome.
Does a person who, because the Bahraini are, as you've already said, a Muslim country, and Westerners generally are seen as Christian by default, are they surprised at the way that Christians are compared to their views ahead of time? Or is it something that, like, oh, this is what I expected? Or
I'm
just curious. Curious question.
Yeah, I think from experience, there's a lot of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
They've maybe heard stuff about church and they've got ideas. They've maybe seen it on TV, in a movie, kind of the caricature of what going to church is like. It's usually something like, you know, in Home Alone, when Kevin is on the run and he runs into church to get away from it.
That kind of real liturgical,
old, beautiful buildings.
Yeah. The choir.
And so our church hires space in a school on a Friday. So for some people, that's a really big draw, so to speak, because there's a lot of curiosity there about you're doing church and you are a church and you're gathering as a church, but you're doing it inside a school or a hotel or a wedding hall, or you're meeting outside somewhere random in the winter. And so a lot of people are very curious about what church looks like. So that, along with the relationships that they have with people, I mean, it's not a weekly thing. There are not weekly guests,
mm-hmm.
but it's not uncommon for people to bring their friends to church or people to call me up because my face and phone number's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And ask about church and what it's like, and are they allowed to come? And
I'm assuming that many people listening to this podcast right now are like potential church planners. What would you say to the guy that was, hey, I would like to go and plant a church in Bahrain? What would you say to that person?
I think people should come.
Mm-hmm.
I think people should come and look and see and experience. I think, like we said, the Middle East is this big, broad area full of very different cultures and countries. And again, this part of the world, we love it so much. It's so diverse. It's so international. It's so welcoming. But yeah, people should come and see what the church landscape looks like already, because you might have all these ideas about how it's going to work and I'm going to do this. And this is what I did in my last church plant in Europe somewhere. I planted a church in the States. This is what we did. And it just might not work like that here.
I mean, would it make sense for someone to say, yes, I want to do that, but they would come and fellowship with you for a year, to learn what the culture is like, and would there be opportunities for?
Oh, definitely, that'd be a really good idea for people to come and see and experience what church is like in this part of the world, and some of the particular and peculiar challenges there are to doing church in this part of the world, but also some of the wonderful blessings. There'll be stuff about planting a church in this part of the world that people have probably never thought about because it's so vastly different. Like little things, like it's Friday morning, you meet on a Friday, your week is structured differently. Little things, but then some of the bigger things and how you relate to government and how you go about bringing people into the church in a way that's respectful of the host country that you're in, but also very warm
faithful
and welcoming
to the scripture
and faithful to scripture as well. So yeah, I think if people even had a little inkling that they wanted to plant a church in this part of the Middle East, the best thing to do would be to come and look.
I have to say that James and I have become friends over the last 5 years. We met in New York. You came out for a CGN vision team meeting in New York, and we became friends, and we talk once a month. Maybe sometimes more, sometimes
just
less.
As often things go wrong for me.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, Jeff is a pastor to pastors.
Jeff is a pastor to pastors.
Oh, here we go. Anyway.
That's how he introduced himself to the...
That's how I'll introduce him to church tomorrow.
Yes. So anyway.
He is, though. You love him.
Yeah. And I would just encourage anyone that feels adventurous and they want to launch out and plant a church here that James is done this. He's been around. He's seasoned. He's seen things.
He knows the ins and outs.
He knows the ins and outs. That's exactly right. And I would encourage you to contact him, as you said, Brian. I think there's huge opportunity here for people to plant churches, and very excited to see what God's going to do. I've seen the health of your church, and to me, that's very exciting. You know, people that live in America, we have our perspective of what church looks like. It doesn't look that way here. It's different. It's similar, but different. It's similar in that we're worshiping the Lord. We're using the word. The Holy Spirit's moving. But it's different in that people seem to really have a deeper trust in the Lord in the way that they walk with him.
James Travis, Jeff Guype, you guys are great. I'm looking forward to this upcoming week and hopefully get a chance to meet some of the people. We will at the church and see more of the beautiful country.
That's right.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, James, for coming. Appreciate you both coming.
Thanks for listening. The Cultivate Church Planting Podcast is part of CGN Media, a podcast network that points to Christ. Check out cgnmedia.org for more great shows and ways to support the ministry.